Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, today is normally tax day, April 15th, of course. It's also known as Tea Party Day, to put a better spin on it, because the last couple of years that's definitely been a focal point of conservatives. But the blissful news, of course, for everyone is that you actually have until Monday because of a holiday here in the District of Columbia. So you actually have a couple extra days to fumble your way to the post office and get those returns off to Uncle Sam. So I'm sure everybody's really excited about that. I know you've got some very positive thoughts on tax day, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I understand that President Obama likes to call this the most wonderful time of the year. They put little big, you know, percentages and decorations all around the White House. He kind of dances the hallways and, you know. I understand he and, you know, Geithner and the rest like to get together and sing Tax Day carols. It's just a, you know, wonderful, wonderful time from his point of view. What is good about Tax Day? Inevitably, you get some, you know, liberal newspaper columnists who talk about how much they enjoy paying their taxes, to which I say, horse pucky. Show me somebody who really enjoys paying their taxes, and I'll show you somebody who's just got more money than they know what to do with. But if I had to find a part of tax day that is not that bad that would qualify as a good martini, by the way, chances are after filing your taxes, you're going to need all three martinis.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'd say as frustrating as the whole process is, the modern era of the internet makes it a little bit easier. We make fun of TurboTax because that's how Tim Geithner explained his taking his kids' summer camp as a deduction, as I understand it, among his other, you know, tax snafus. Before during his confirmation hearings. But, you know, you look at it, you plug in the information, it does the calculations for you. I see it as a good effort to try to simplify the process. It says something that this is occurring from a private company doing this rather than actual, you know, the IRS. But all in all, an electronic filing, you press the button, it's gone, it's there. I think as bad as it is, I think if everything was still paper-based, it might be even more frustrating and time-consuming and aggravating than it already is. So that's the that's the very minuscule good martini that I can find today, Greg.
Well, I'll take that one. I guess, the like you said, there's not a lot of great martinis on tax day. I guess mine would be a very perhaps temporary one, and that's that despite Obama's best efforts and that of some of his liberal allies in Congress, the Bush tax cuts for now are still in place. He tried to and still plans to soak the rich. He plans to go after a whole bunch of other things. But the tax cuts that got this economy going, really, especially the dividend and capital gains tax cuts back in 2003, still in place, as well as some of the good ones still from 2001. I'd still like to see the estate tax killed, but, you know, can't have everything right now. But as long as he hasn't actually successfully ended those tax cuts yet, it's still a positive that those are helping us stay afloat, even though he and his agenda are trying to sink this economy as quickly as possible. On to number two now. And Jim, I'm sure there's no shortage of options here for you on what you like least about tax day.
Yeah, this isn't really the bad martini. This is the bad bar. You have your choice of so many options. Something I think is a key difference between what people like to call the governing class and you know, arguably the rest of America. When I look at, you know, the taxes that I have to do, the federal tax, you know, I'm going to get a modest refund. State tax in Virginia, it's not that bad a state. I'm going to get a bit of a refund there. But I think you look at each level of government, each level is convinced that they're reasonable in what they're asking from their taxpayers. And you can probably make an argument that, you know, federal tax rates aren't by themselves absolutely crippling. States, you know, vary a great deal. Some states have absolutely no income tax. Some have pretty high income tax. And then localities, obviously, there's even more variety. Nonetheless, I think when you add up all three layers, that's when people really feel like they're losing an arm and a leg. And you look at the local taxes, which are most often assessed through property taxes. You know, God forbid I lose my job. Well, if I don't have much income, my income taxes go down. If I don't have money and I don't spend as much, I'm not paying as much in sales tax because there's, you're just not buying as much. Property taxes, they're just there year in, year out because your home exists. And it's one of those things where when localities assess property taxes, they don't care if you've had a good year. They don't care if you've had a bad year, if your income is up, income is down. The value of your property is entirely assessed by the sales rates of the properties around you. So if everybody around you is selling their house for a very high price, they're doing fine. But you aren't, and you have to pay a higher property tax based on their sales. So I think just kind of the Dagwood sandwich of taxation, where just layer upon layer we get, because I'm not even getting into, you know, gas taxes and, you know,
right,
all the other little, you know, little ways that, you know, governments can nickel and dime you. I think that's probably the worst aspect of tax day, that we end up paying in so many different forms and so many different ways, and yet on so many levels our governing class insists it's just not enough.
I'm still marveling at the Dagwood reference. That's a great pull in the middle of that conversation. I'm going to go pretty much along the same lines, but mine's going to be the snowball effect, because a lot of times, especially when it comes to, as you see with the debate over Obamacare and other mandates out of Washington, states have no choice but to try and find a way to fund these things, because the government doesn't do that. They just decide to order things, and that's how we get massive deficits, and those things have to be passed along. So I think it's just a lack of coordination a lot of times that ends up hurting, especially the state and even sometimes local governments, although they're certainly not blameless in a lot of things. They like to soak us as well a lot of the time. But, basically having to force things upon taxpayers because the federal government is forcing things upon them, it's just kind of this endless domino theory. And until we really get a handle on things here in Washington, they're going to have fewer and fewer options but to keep soaking us, whether they want to or not, even though, of course, most of them want to, especially around here. So on to number three now, Jim. And I guess the crazy part of the tax code is perhaps some of your favorite or least favorite or most creative provisions. We've been talking about accounting gimmicks and all sorts of other things. So a lot to choose from here for the most bizarre part of the tax code.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to say, what aspect of the tax code drives me crazy, I'm going to ask you to picture a young Jim back in the late 80s and early 90s. My father was a retired accountant. He did people's tax returns during the spring months. I learned not to talk to Dad during those months because he was very busy and very stressed. And I think if you had to ask him what was the thing that would often drive him the craziest, it was the marriage penalty. It was this idea that, unless you're some person who absolutely hates the institution of marriage, which is, I think, very few Americans. If marriage is a good thing, it brings together two people, it creates a stable family environment, it's love, it's what our lives are about. And for some reason, government has set up the tax code to punish it. If you remain single, you're filing singly instead of filing jointly, and your income, you're only paying taxes on your income. You get married, the government considers you, if you have a spouse who makes roughly the same level you do, in the eyes of the government, you're making twice as much. Well, yes and no. I mean, obviously your spouse has their expenses, you have your expenses. It's not like your income doubled. And yet in the eyes of the government, this is seen as something that is, getting married is some sort of, tax advantage. They needed to punish this. They needed to stop this. I'm looking at back in the 90s, it was, in the neighborhood of about $1,300. Obviously there've been various efforts to eliminate this in the lower tax brackets. It's still around in the higher tax brackets. It just strikes me as a good example of inadvertent social engineering through the tax code. And it's something that we as small government conservatives really should be wary of and be fighting against. And I think obviously many social conservatives, this probably makes their skin crawl as well, the idea that we're creating a wonderful tax incentive for cohabitation and not getting married. And I think most people would say that's really not what the country needs at this particular moment. So that's something that's always stuck out in my mind as a good example of the government not even people have complained about it, but we've never really seen that much of a serious effort for the government to eliminate the marriage penalty. And the very fact that we have a marriage penalty strikes me as tells you a lot about everything you need to know about the federal government system of taxation.
That's exactly right. Mine is not overly crazy. It just drives me crazy. It's not the Bloomberg tax on salt or tax on Happy Meals or other garbage that's being thrown out there to try and engineer our lives like you were talking about. It's a concept that this president loves, and it's tax credits for people who do what he wants them to do, whether it's green energy changes to your house or whatever little, pet political project he wants to promote. Just give me the stinking tax cut and let me decide how I want to spend my own money instead of making me jump through hoops like I'm a 4-year-old. It's just ridiculous. And the idea that that's how people are going to end up saving money is just insane. And it's the only way these people understand that they can actually get any sort of progress towards their goals, because they know they're ludicrous and any right-thinking people won't actually spend their time and money going in that direction. So they have to do it that way in order to get anybody to bite. And it's just really annoying.
Amen.
So, Jim, I'd say enjoy tax weekend, but I'm pretty sure that's impossible, even though we're both getting slight refunds here. So
I filed yesterday. So life, life will go on. It's not, we will survive, but you just look at the entire process and figure there's got to be some simpler, easier way. And hopefully someday, with the right folks fighting for it, we'll end up getting there.
Amen. Amen. Hopefully some of them will be a major force in the 2012 election. Jim, despite the fact that it is tax weekend, have a great one, and we'll talk to you Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.